The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in this Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you have a problem with the idea of having to accept Christianity or Jesus or God or the Bible by blind faith. You certainly don't want to be separated from God or have some eternal punishment when you die. But on the other hand, if this isn't true, if this is a bunch of nonsense, you don't want to give your whole life to something only to find out it isn't true. And yet the Bible tells us to have blind faith, doesn't it? Well, my friend, I understand your concern, and you would be absolutely right if you weren't so wrong. You're right in that you shouldn't follow anything by blind faith. You're wrong in that the Bible doesn't tell you to have blind faith. You might meet Christians that tell you that, though. Sometimes a lot of our churches don't do a very good job of educating Christians. But let me tell you somebody who educates Christians. He teaches high school. He is a Christian apologist. He is one of our rotating co-hosts and often subs for me when I'm away. Please say hello to Kevin Conover.
Yeah, hi. Thanks a lot for having me again, Bob. I love coming on the show. And I think we've got an interesting subject to talk about tonight. I took a quote from Friedrich Nietzsche, who said, God is dead. He's famous for
famous
this quote.
Poem, where he said, God is dead.
Yes, he was a German philosopher and poet and composer. And he had an interesting idea. He claimed that the death of God would eventually lead to the loss of any universal perspective on things, and along with it, any coherent sense of objective truth. Instead, we would retain only our own multiple, diverse, and fluid perspectives. And so there's a big discussion going on about morals and whether morals are actually factual or they're just opinions. And this is a significant subject that I discuss with my students and I teach on. And so I wanted to talk about that tonight. My website is educateforlife.org, educateforlife.org. There's lots of great resources on there, some great articles on what we're going to be talking about tonight, moral relativism and so forth.
Well, you know, speaking of moral relativism and Friedrich Nietzsche, what's interesting is he was one of the few consistent moral relativists because the thing, most people don't live consistently as a moral relativist. Somebody could be in a classroom and hear that morals are relative, but if they walk outside the classroom and somebody stole their bicycle or their backpack, they cry out with moral indignation right away. But Nietzsche was consistent enough to say that if God is dead, morality is dead too. So he came up with this idea that he called the Superman. The Superman was somebody who could make up his own morals and admit that he was making them up. Most people don't admit that they're making up morals. They just act as if our morals are something we should adhere to. And yet if God didn't exist, we would be making them up.
Yeah.
But if we are making them up, then we'd have to be honest enough to say, well, if we're just making them up, then who am I to judge you?
Yeah.
Yet we judge each other all the time. So Nietzsche, boy, you got to at least hand it to him for trying to be consistent. Of course, he went insane late in his life, so I don't know how much the the consistency helped him. Maybe he wasn't too happy with what he concluded. But at least you got to give the guy a few stars for trying to be consistent.
Sure, sure. Well, hey, also we have a guest on the show with us tonight, which I'm excited to have him on. And he is from the San Diego New Atheists and Agnostics. And he is here to give us the perspective coming from not a Christian theist position, but somebody who's coming from a more atheistic or agnostic position on his view of morality. And this will generate an interesting discussion, I think. Wesley, I'd like to welcome you. Are you there?
Hi there, Bob. Hi there, Kevin. Glad to be back.
Hey, Wesley, good to have you. And what's your last name, Wesley?
McMullen.
Okay,
Great, great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on.
He said glad to be back. Has he been on the show before?
Well, he hasn't been on the show, but he was in my class at church. I invited him as a guest.
Oh, wonderful. Okay,
yeah, and good. So it was a great discussion we had there.
Very nice to meet you, Wesley. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, I was excited to invite him back on the radio and have this discussion.
Great.
So, what we're going to be discussing tonight, moral relativism, Wesley actually does some volunteer work, helping out veterans and so forth. And Wesley, I just wanted to ask you, what is your position on morality and as an atheist, where do morals come from? And you personally, where do you get your morals from?
Boy, where do I get my morals from? Well, definitely not Bible. As far as I'm concerned, I used to be, as I told you once before, Kevin, I used to be a Christian, and until I read the Bible, that's when I changed my perspectives and my views and became an atheist, and I certainly don't get my morals from the Bible. I myself get my morals from society, from what I've learned, through reason, through knowledge, through progression. I believe in the evaluation of consequences of our actions with respect to our specific goals, and I believe that's how we determine exactly what is right and what is wrong, and it's actually just that simple.
So through reason and so forth is where you determine what's right and wrong. It's interesting you said it's not from the Bible. The Bible, especially the New Testament, it says in Matthew chapter 25, Jesus is talking and he says that he's talking to the righteous and he says, and they say, "Hey, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger, invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" And he says, "Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." And there are numerous organizations around the world, World Vision, Habitat for Humanity, the Salvation Army, who are out there, you know, taking that message to heart. And me personally, when I, after, you know, being a Christian for a while now, I'm motivated to, you know, be kind to people, to love people, to, you know, sometimes when somebody's mean to me, do my best to be nice back. And these are all, I'm motivated by what I've read in the Bible. And I'm just curious why, you know, maybe why you're saying that you didn't get your morality from the Bible. And then if you don't get it from the Bible, so for example, you're doing work with veterans, and what is driving you to do that? What motivates you to make the decision, "I'm going to help these veterans out of the difficult situation they're in"?
Well, once again, it comes back to the evaluation of consequences to our actions. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a good thing for these people. It makes me feel good. I know I'm helping the community by doing what I'm doing, and I know others are doing it also. It's not necessary. It's not because of the Bible.
Sure.
For example, you were asking me certain objections I have as far as morality, as far as the Bible is concerned. For example, like 1 Corinthians, when it goes into specifications and details as to how women are to be treated, how women are created specifically for the man and not vice versa.
Hold on. I've got to stop you there, because he does say vice versa. He says that women came from man, and then he immediately, as if somebody was going to take issue with it, says, "However, man is born of women." He also said that women's body belongs to her husbands. He immediately said the husband's body belongs to the women. In those days, that was such a chauvinistic culture. That would have been about as egalitarian and equalizing of men and women as we can possibly get. So I needed to stop you there, because people quote these passages out of context. I know you weren't trying to quote it out of context, but I did need to let our audience know the context of that passage.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't think it's out of context at all, because I could go on to say that, for example, it is shameful for a woman to speak in church and must wait and ask the man at home. I mean,
there's a context for that, too. The context for that is that the early church was modeled after the Jewish synagogue. The men and women sat on separate sides. The women had not yet been educated. They were being educated, which was something the church was doing, which was groundbreaking. The only way for women to ask questions was to shout across the room. That had to do with order. But the same Apostle Paul, in the same letter, the same book, talked about women praying and prophesying in the church. Prophet was one of the five authoritative offices in the church. So again, we need to look at all the words of the Bible.
Oh, I'm totally looking at all words of the Bible, and I'm not finished. If I stop getting interrupted, I could actually continue a little bit further. How about as far as wives to submit to their husbands, for the husband is to be worshipped the same as you would Jesus Christ? I mean, these are not moral teachings that I believe. I mean, it's explicit throughout the Bible that women are to be treated as chattel.
I don't want to interrupt you, but we do need to be able to respond to what you're saying, and this has to be a dialogue, right?
Sure.
Okay, in 1 Peter, that's explained too. There are certain institutions, and one of them was slavery, and one of them was women submitting to their husbands, and these were temporary institutions, because at that time in history, if the slaves and the women who were treated like slaves were to start disobeying their masters and husbands, it would have turned Christianity into a violent bloodbath. Jesus and the apostles did not want a violent revolution. I'm just saying, I understand your objections, but we need to look at these not only in the context of other scripture, but in the context of what was going on in that culture.
Yeah, and not only that, but you also got to be clear there that where he says, wives submit to your husbands, he also says that husbands must lay down their lives for their wives. And he says, you must love your wife like Christ loved the church and gave his life up for her. And that often gets left out by people who, for whatever reason, may want to use the scriptures to justify being a bad husband. Maybe that's the case, but that's not what the Bible teaches. And there are plenty of Christians who have done a poor job of studying the scriptures and then used it to their advantage. But the reality is that many atheists have done very, very wicked things in the name of atheism, in the name that there is no God. And so we can't take somebody who's been a bad role model and say, okay, therefore, this philosophy is wrong. But I'm less interested in not so much where, the attacks on the Bible as far as, hey, is the Bible moral and so forth, but I'm more interested in where an atheist gets their morality from. And the reason I say that is because, and just correct me if I'm wrong, but as I see it, if I look at an atheist and a person says there is no God and there is no afterlife, if I was in that position, I would be less likely to be willing to go out of my way for somebody, knowing that, hey, I am not going to be rewarded for this except here. And so unless I see some sort of immediate reward, I don't have a motivation to go out and go out of my way to do something for somebody.
Wow. Then I have to say, I hope you always stay a believer, because I find that to be absolutely reprehensible. I do not believe in an afterlife, and I have no moral problems at all with being nice to my fellow man, under the consideration that I know I will not be going to heaven. I will not be, I'm not going to hell. I'm doing it because this is the way I am. This is the way we are. We do it to be a good community, and we're not doing it because we're trying to bribe our way into some kind of heaven.
Well, Wesley, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, but I have a feeling that you're in the small minority there. If we were to take lot of people and we were to say, hey, what's your position on God? There are many people who are going to hold the position that that why should I spend my life? I mean, if we just take, there are a lot of people who are believers in Christ and believers in God who have literally said, you know what, because there is a heaven, I am going to spend the rest of my life helping others. I'm literally going to spend all of my life helping other people. And we see this all over the world, people who have done this. There are Mother Teresa's organization, the Missionaries of Charity, has over 4,500 nuns who have committed themselves to helping the poorest of the poor in the world. And so this is purely because of Christ. So I think it's I don't think it's right to say, okay, the Bible doesn't produce good morals. Obviously, these people are motivated by Christ. And all I'm asking is,
I did not say that there are no moral Christians out there. I know quite a number of them.
Sure.
Your question was whether where I got my morals from, if I have no belief or acceptance of heaven or reward of infinite divinity.
Wesley,
in my perspective, I would consider myself to be even more genuine and sincere, because I do believe this is the only life that I have. Therefore, I'm going to make it the best life that I can make it. And as a result, I'm going to make it the best for everyone else also. I have no concern with living an afterlife and going to heaven and pleasing somebody to allow me into heaven. I'm doing it because this is my moral character. I represent a group that shares the same moral characters as what I have. And the reason we're doing this is because we believe a good society progresses through reason, through evidence, and through treating everybody else the way we wish to be treated and live progressively towards a more harmonious future. And that is exactly why I started the companies that I have, the charity that I have, and that's exactly what motivates me to keep on doing what I do in a secular way.
Okay, Wesley, let me respond to that for a moment. And we did let you talk there, and we're both trying. I know we're all kind of talking over each other a little. I want to make sure you're being fairly represented. If I'm hearing you correctly, you are saying to be motivated to just do the right thing for people in and of itself, in its own right, is a high value, and even higher if I'm not thinking about consequences like heaven and hell, that I'm doing it just because it's the right thing to do. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Okay. Now, I accept that, and I think that's very, very commendable. Now, here's my question, though. When we talk about God, we don't immediately have to jump to the Bible. We could just say some kind of God. So obviously, as an atheist, you're not merely saying that you don't believe in the God of the Bible. You're saying you don't believe in any God at all, correct?
That's right. There's been no supporting evidence to lead me to the conclusion to accept the fact that there is a deity.
Okay, but there is a little bit of supporting evidence, and that is that when somebody lives according to right and wrong, they are living as though there actually is some kind of God. Now, I know that when I say that, you immediately want to jump in and you say, well, I don't get my morality from the Bible. I accept that. But I'm not talking about the Bible right now. What I'm saying is, if I were to ask you, and then Kevin's asked you several times now, where did your morality come from? Your answer has been pretty much, well, we should just evaluate what's a good consequence and we should do right because it's the right thing to do. Well, if we're here by randomness and chance and there is no God, then you would have to admit that we could all have a different opinion about morality. And yet, when I hear that you're down helping out the vets, and I think that's wonderful that you're doing that, you don't sound like you have some unusual opinion of morality. You sound like you're just accepting that you said yourself, we should treat other people the way we want to be treated. What if you met somebody who says, I don't care how people are treated. I'm going to murder. I'm going to rape. I'm going to steal. I'm guessing you would tell them that was wrong. But if we're here by randomness and chance, wouldn't you have to agree that their opinion is just as valid as your own?
Well, you're conflating two completely different arguments and two completely different topics that have nothing to do with each other. You're talking about us being here by randomness and chance. That has nothing to do with my morality or the morality of other religions. I mean, that has nothing to do with
As a matter of fact, it has everything to do with it, because if you're here by randomness and chance, then your morality is also random. It's something you're choosing. There is no, if person A and person B has a difference of opinion about what's right or wrong, and there is no God and nobody to break the tie, the most you could say with morality is, in my opinion, we should treat people properly. In my opinion, murder is wrong. In my opinion, racism is wrong. If it's not your opinion, if it's absolute morality, then we have to ask where that morality came from.
Okay, interesting. Now you're putting words into my mouth. Not once have I ever said anything about absolute morality, nor do I accept the fact that there is an absolute morality. We have shown through secular morality means, through progression and reason and evidence, that morality changes. Now, you had asked whether or not morality is necessarily subjective. I would like to say yes and no to that at the same time. Society agrees as to what is considered to be moral at a given time and a given place. We can go back a little bit further. I mean, there was a time not too long ago where black people were once considered to be inferior and subhuman, not to mention women. Now, we have changed our morals about these particular topics through reason and evidence. We now know that they're not inferior. The Bible makes it clear. I'm going to stay away from the Bible. I'll just stay away from the Bible for the sake of argument. We've changed these morals based not on biblical morality, but based solely on secular morality because we know better. We've changed these perspectives. We now know it's immoral to have slaves. You ask anybody now, do you condone slavery? They'll say no. Do you condone to kill the unbelievers, as in Deuteronomy 13? Of course not. We've always been recognized by the mass population, and I would like to say the world, as being correct because we no longer accept the views as the Bible as truth.
Okay, first of all, a lot of the abolitionists that fought against the South were basing the morality from the Bible. However, it's also true that even a person that didn't believe in the Bible, just from their own conscience, knew that slavery was wrong. You yourself said we should treat people the way we want to be treated. Yeah, but now you're saying that's not a universal morality, that maybe it's okay to not treat people the way we want to be treated?
Of course not. I've been to 39 countries around the world, and not all countries share the same morality. You go to Saudi Arabia, they have a completely different perspective on morality and religion. That's why morality is necessarily subjective to a circumstance, to a time, and to a place.
Okay, so let me be clear. So here's the thing with morality, whether morals are relative or morals are facts. Okay, so you're saying that morals are opinions, but yet would you tell somebody today who came up to you and said slavery is wrong, would you tell them that no, they said slavery is okay, would you tell them that no, you're wrong, slavery is not okay?
No, I would challenge their perspectives, though.
But in challenging their perspective, you're admitting that there is a universal morality. I understand things change from cultures to cultures. You use the culture of Saudi Arabia. I'll bet there's a lot of things they do in Saudi Arabia that you would just say are wrong. But I could point out an example. In the Arabic culture, it's considered polite to burp in the middle of your meal. In America, it's considered impolite. But you know what both cultures agree to? We should be polite. So there is this universal morality that we should treat other people with respect. It is true that sometimes from culture to culture, different mores and customs redefine what they consider to be respectful. That's true. But the underlying golden rule, which you yourself have articulated, I should say, does permeate all cultures.
Yeah. And I would also say that, you know, as a Christian, I'm going to pull my morals from what Christ taught. Love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, give to the poor, all these sorts of things. But from an atheistic perspective, as far as I understand it, you only have three places to get your morals from. You either make them up yourself and say, this is my morality. You either go with consensus, what everybody votes on, or you go with might makes right, which is whoever has the biggest guns makes the rules. And these are the only places
Neither of the three will I agree to. Absolutely not. Once again, I think this is maybe my fifth time saying it. It has to do with looking for objectively the consequences of our actions with respect to our goals. Our goals are we want to live harmoniously with each other.
Yeah, but you're saying, Wesley, you're saying that's the ultimate good. Somebody else may say, I don't give a rip about living harmoniously with anybody. You're imposing what you think is the ideal on other people. Who are you to tell them what the ideal is?
Words in my mouth.
Okay, hold on, Wesley. We're not trying to put words in your mouth. We're trying to understand you. We're trying to be fair. I do appreciate you being on our show. Please, my friend, hang with us over the break. We do want to give you a chance to make sure you've said everything you want to say. You're listening to Kevin Conover and Bob Siegel and our friend Wesley. We'll be right back.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that He is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org. If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. We now return to The Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to KCBQ 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I'm joined by my good friend and co-host, Kevin Conover, who brought over our friend Wesley. And Wesley, we're very glad to have you. Welcome back to our program. And Kevin, you had a question for Wesley.
Yeah, I was just to recap here what I was saying, that as a Christian, obviously I'm pulling my morals from the New Testament. And then I mentioned that, as far as I know, there are three places that a agnostic or atheist is going to pull their morality from, which is individual morality. Each person makes their own morality. Moral consensus would be number two. It's what most of the people in a society have established. And then number three, might makes right. But you said that you would not adhere to any of those. Can you explain that?
As I did just before the break, I did say that it has nothing. I disagree with all three of those. You said might makes right? Absolutely not. You said personal, subjective. No, because I could be mistaken.
Okay.
You said the moral consensus. You said the what was it?
Yeah, moral consensus. What society deems moral. The majority of people deem moral.
Okay. Well, for the most part, kind of true, but with a bit of an explanation. I mean, before, I think I've mentioned it now 8 times. In total,
sure.
It has to do with the consequences of our goals. Now, if you don't mind me, consequences of our actions in relation to our goals. I don't think I can make that any more clear than that 8th time that I've just spelled.
You know, actually, Wesley, I think you are making yourself clear, and we're just not agreeing with your interpretation of your conclusions, because I am hearing you say that, but you're also, I don't think you realize that you're also saying other things. On one hand, you say that society determines our morals, and yet you yourself look back at the pre-Civil War South. They got together as a society. We have no problem saying that they were wrong. Even if we could go back through time and live in those days, there were people who lived in the South. They knew that slavery was wrong. The only reason the society was even able to justify what they were doing is they had to reinvent their own anthropology and say, well, African Americans, well, they don't have souls or they're not real people. Why did they feel the need to do that? Because the moment they admitted that they're human beings, they knew that you have to treat human beings a certain way. The very fact that people don't live by the conscience that's inside of them suggests that conscience comes from an outside source. And when you say that there's this golden rule that people should live by, maybe you're not bringing the Bible into it, but you're, where did our conscience come from? Maybe our joint intuitive awareness that we should treat people a certain way finds origin in a being who will literally hold us accountable someday. You don't have to open a Bible to at least, isn't that at least a fair question to raise?
Okay, I can't get any of my words in. Every time I'm just about to make a point, for some reason I keep getting...
Well, actually, we're listening to your points and then we're responding. It does have to be a dialogue, my friend. You can't just come on and give a monologue. We listen to you and then we talk for a while. That's the way talk radio works. That's what you agreed to do, right?
I did agree to do that. But
okay, thank you.
Points across in,
well,
like,
okay, now it's your turn. Go ahead and respond to what I said. We'll listen.
Wow. Okay. I'd like to ask a question, if I may.
Please do.
Kevin mentioned that he gets his morality specifically from the Bible, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So my question to you now, what about the different cultures in the world that do not follow the Bible, and are they any less moral than you?
Okay. So my position on this is that you can have people have different moral opinions, but it doesn't mean that morality is all of a sudden subjective. So, for example, if I got together with somebody and started playing chess with them and I started jumping their pieces with my pawn and they were like, hey, this isn't checkers, and I said, this is the way I play chess, it doesn't mean all of a sudden that the rules of chess are an opinion. And so there are certain ways people live in different parts of the world that I think are morally wrong. For example, I'm opposed to the view that a woman is worth half as much as a man. And in Saudi Arabia, the testimony of a woman is half as much as a man. And I don't think that's morally right. And so I have no problem saying that because I do believe in moral absolutes. But I think your position would be very difficult because you'd have to say, well, since all morals are opinions and I'm no better than you are, therefore your position is just as valid as my position and I can't impose my morality on you. I have to tolerate your morality and say we're all equal in this regard.
That is absolutely incredible. Not once in this entire program have I said anything of the sort.
No, I'm saying that, not you.
We are challenging you to the logical conclusions of the points you're making. We're saying the points you're making have certain ramifications. Now, you're a bright guy. You understand the idea of looking at a point and then challenging the ramifications of it, right?
Right, I do.
Okay.
That's why I have a problem with the Christian views and the biblical morals.
Well, right now we're talking about your morals, not the biblical morals.
Biblical morals, correct.
No, I'm talking about your morals. The question that we keep putting to you is, where do your morals come from? You say they don't come from God, but you talk as if they're absolute, but then you kind of switch and you say, well, but then they're not always absolute. I'm hearing you say several things at one time.
That's incredible. This is now the ninth time I'm going to say this. Not once have I said anything of the sort. My morals come from the consequences of one's actions relative to their goals. I have a goal in mind. I look at consequences based upon whatever the actions may be, and I take the appropriate steps.
Right. And then Kevin asked you a very good question. He said, what if somebody doesn't care about looking at the consequences? Would you tell that person that he was wrong? What would your answer be to that?
I would challenge them on that.
Why would you challenge them on that if there's no such thing as objective right or wrong? Why challenge them? Why not just say, evidently, your view of morality is different than mine? And since there is no God, see, this is where randomness and chance does come into it, because if there is no God and we're here by randomness and chance, your opinion was just developed by randomness and chance.
Well, how do you think we progress, sir? We progress with a difference of opinion.
Even the word progress assumes that there's some value that we're progressing to. It assumes value. There could, if we're here by accident, there can be no such thing as purpose and value. Purpose and value is the opposite of accident.
I'm keeping tally of this. This is the third time I've now said, I said nothing about random chance or accident. That's the third time.
Okay, Wesley, we're not trying to keep score, and I don't think either one of us have said anything demeaning toward you. I trust the respect could work both ways. We're just trying to have a friendly conversation with you.
You continue to put words in my mouth. We cannot have a proper discourse.
Well, I've heard you say a lot of things about Christians that don't represent me, but I didn't accuse you of putting words in my mouth because I know that you honestly believe that. What we're doing is we're challenging you as to the ramifications of what we're saying. We know what you said, and we're not putting words in your mouth. We're saying, if you're going to say this, wouldn't these be the ramifications? Now, I know that atheists love logic, and they love debate and philosophy, and that's what philosophers do. They challenge the ramifications of the things they say, correct?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, we don't do that with philosophy? We don't challenge ramifications?
Sir, can I please answer the question?
Please go ahead.
You said atheists love debate, they love philosophy, they love science. That is not true.
Atheists don't love science and debate? Why do they have atheist clubs?
No Christians that love science and debate. What do you call them?
I am a Christian who loves science and debate, but I've met more atheists that love science and debate than Christians. I think you too, right, Kevin? I meet atheists that love science and debate. All right, so you're an atheist that doesn't love science. Okay, if you don't love science and debate, that's fine, but you are on our program, and one of the things we do on this program is discuss things.
I'm open for discussion.
Now, okay.
With a decent intellect or the ability for rational thinking or any means of cerebration would appreciate science, understanding, wisdom, curiosity. And you fit that. I fit that. It's not necessarily dependent upon atheism.
Okay, well, I agree with that. Well, we didn't say that atheists exclusively felt that way. We just said atheists do feel that way.
here's another question. I'm going to try to take this in a slightly different direction real quick here. Okay, so here's a question I'm gonna pop out there. I believe that the morality that we see today that is demonstrated throughout the world, even the morality that you're demonstrating in your own life, Wesley, I believe it's best explained by the idea taught in Romans chapter 2 that there is a God who put a conscience in our heart, and this is what drives our morality. On the other hand, as far as I understand it, evolution explains morality through genetics and through biology and says, okay, so this is what I've heard most atheists say. So we derive our morality because it helps us survive better. But looking at this, if I look at lions, gorillas, many other animals, what I see is often the strongest in a group of lions is the one that takes precedence, and he has no problem pushing out other lions and so forth. Same with gorillas, same with many other kind of animals. And it seems to me that it would make more sense if evolution is what was driving our morality, then what we would see is a lot of things like survival of the fittest habits, things where slavery is a good thing. It's a moral thing because it's actually moving evolution forward. And things like rape, where if evolution was driving our morality, it would be passing on your genes through rape and through these other things. And so, that being the case, my question is, when I see people who are helping the poor, they're helping the helpless, they're trying to help the innocent, they're striving to be fair, they're striving to be kind, they're self-sacrificing. When I see these things, these aren't the things that strike me as survival of the fittest, natural selection, and so forth and so on. So it seems to me that there's a better case to be made that our morals are coming from a divine being who has placed a conscience within us, versus the idea that we are products of biology and our morals are a result of that biology. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are of that is that you do not understand the basis as to what evolution is. Evolution is simply a biological phenomenon and has nothing to do with morality.
Well, if it has nothing to do with morality, then why do I hear atheists who believe in evolution all the time say, hey, I don't have to be a Christian to have morals? Now, I agree. You don't have to be a Christian to have morals. You don't have to read the Bible to have morals. But we're still asking, where do the morals come from? If they don't come from a conscience which came from God, then we invented them. Now, hypothetically, maybe we invented them, but the problem is somebody can come along, disagree with your invention of morals at any time, and you've already told us several times that if somebody said he didn't care about doing what was best for society or the golden rule, you would challenge him. And I ask you again, why challenge a viewpoint that's every bit as valid as your own? Because there, if there is no such thing as objective morality, his viewpoint is as valid as your own.
Because that is the purpose. That is the foundational principles in which progression is born.
How can there be a purpose and a progression if we're here by randomness and chance?
I'm not going to discuss that. That is a completely meaningless topic. I've already.
Well, I think you're saying there's no God. Then that means we're either here by randomness and chance, or we're here for a purpose. How could that topic be more meaningful, my friend?
That is not a true dichotomy, sir. It is not one or the other. It could very well be neither. It is not a dichotomy. You are incorrect.
Okay, well, I'm not incorrect, but I'm going to let Kevin jump in so that I don't do all the talking here. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I guess what he's saying is that you keep referencing progress or what is most reasonable or what is the best, but these are all definitions that you've made up, meaning your definition of progress, your definition of what's most benefit, and you're using your own mind to reason this. Now, somebody else can come along and say, by my reasoning, I don't care about what's best for society as a whole. There are many people who feel that way. And so...
And they have their own... They have the ability to challenge other people's opinions in a rational discourse that leads to a progressive result. That is how we progress as a society. We come together, we have a discourse, we debate, we argue, we make certain points.
So I guess what I'm saying is, if there's no standard of what progress is, then... You have nowhere to go. It's like somebody making a New Year's resolution who has no idea of what's virtuous or what's bad. Okay, if I say I'm going to make a New Year's resolution and I'm going to be a better person this year, but I have no idea what it means to be better, then I'm just going off in some random different direction. It doesn't mean it's a better direction. It doesn't mean I'm making progress.
Right. I agree with you. The principles that we are progressing towards could very well be wrong and rewritten. That's the beauty about secular morality, is the fact that it's data-driven. I mean, it is...
The problem with that is that you could justify slavery. You could justify horrible things, the Holocaust. You can justify a woman being half as much as a man. You can justify all these things because you don't know what the standard is. There is no standard. And so anybody can go anywhere and do anything. And this is the main problem I have with moral relativism and the idea that all morals are opinions. I'm going in a specific direction, and that direction is towards a better society. But you don't know what direction you're going because you have no standard by which to measure where you're going. That's the main problem that I'm seeing here and that we're trying to get across.
Okay, well, it's very simple. We look at the principles that have been founded by other people, we take them, and we take it forward.
Hitler's principles?
People of the past. I mean, like, for example, he used slavery or treating women like they're cattle, for example.
You have no forward, Wesley. You have no forward. You just have a different direction. You have no standard by which to measure forward.
You can assert that all you want, sir, but the fact of the matter is that we can test for these.
Test.
Okay, I'll tell you what, Wesley, listen, I appreciate you coming on the show, and I want to make an offer to you because it sounds like the format frustrated you a little bit, and I don't blame you. I might have been frustrated if I were in your shoes. I would like to invite you to come back sometime with just me, and I'll bring in a moderator, and our time will be not only your time, but my time will be measured. And I've done this before. You could go to my website, and you will have equal time. There will be no interrupting. Not that we were trying to interrupt you today, but I understand there's, you know, all three of us are talking. If you would like to come back, sir, I'd be happy and honored to have you, and we'll bring in a moderator, and you could do it on the phone, or you could even come into the studio if you so desire. Would you like to do that?
I'm thrilled.
Okay, we will do that. Then hang on. We're going to say goodbye to you now. Please give your information to Nick. And Wesley, thank you so much. I really do appreciate you coming on. I really do enjoy talking to you. Thank you very much for coming on, my friend.
Yeah, thank you, Wesley. Appreciate it. Hopefully we'll do something like this again in the future.
I certainly hope so. Please let me know. Thank
okay.
You.
God bless you. Oops. Well, I'll say God bless you anyway. Bye-bye.
Okay. Take care. Yeah. So that's great. You know, I think it's important as Christians that we're constantly talking to people. We're understanding what we believe better and better. And the reality is this, that if we have the truth, we don't have to worry about messing up. God is not up in heaven shaking, scared that somebody's going to prove he's not real. And so what we want to do, the Bible says in Proverbs, iron sharpens iron. And that's what this is all about. That's why we have Wesley on the air. I want to kind of wrap the show up as we have about 15 minutes left here, or 10 minutes or so. I wanted to talk about a couple things that kind of seemed unclear when we were talking with Wesley. In Amos chapter 7, the Bible specifically talks about a plumb line. And if you know what a plumb line is in contracting, it's kind of like a level. It's a standard by which they were able to determine whether a wall was plumb, meaning straight, okay? And it was a string with a weight at the end that was pulled down by gravity, and they would line it up with the wall, and they would be able to tell whether that wall was straight or not. And if the wall was off, then they could fix it. In Isaiah 28:17, it says, I will make justice the measuring line and righteousness the plumb line. And this is very important because as I was talking with Wesley, if you don't have a standard by which you measure right and wrong, you don't know which direction you're going. You could be going in the completely wrong direction and not even know it. You could have morals that are becoming worse and worse and think your morals are getting better and better because you don't have a plumb line. You don't have a standard by which you measure. Now, as the Bible says in Isaiah there, I will make justice the plumb line. This is God's terminology for his standards. His laws are what we are to measure ourselves against to say, I want to improve my morality. Okay, it's kind of like C.S. Lewis said, you can't know what a crooked line is unless you know what a straight line is. If somebody drew a crooked line on the board and you didn't know what a straight line was, you wouldn't be able to call it crooked because you don't know what straight is. Let me read you a little bit of a quote here from C.S. Lewis. This had a big impact. This is kind of what drew him to Christ, drew him to theism. A belief in God, and then ultimately to Christ. This is what he says in Mere Christianity. My argument against God was that the universe seems so cruel and unjust. But how had I got this idea of just and unjust? A man does not call a line crooked unless he has some idea of a straight line. What was I comparing this universe with when I called it unjust? If the whole show was bad and senseless from A to Z, so to speak, why did I, who was supposed to be part of the show, find myself in such a violent reaction against it? Of course, I could have given up my idea of justice by saying it was nothing but a private idea of my own. That's moral relativism. But if I did that, then my argument against God collapsed too, for the argument depended on saying the world was really unjust, not simply that it did not happen to please my fancies. Thus, in the very act of trying to prove that God did not exist, in other words, that the whole of reality was senseless, I found I was forced to assume that one part of reality, namely my idea of justice, was full of sense. If the whole universe has no meaning, we should never have found out that it has no meaning. Just as if there were no light in the universe and therefore no creatures with eyes, we should never have known it was dark. Dark would be without meaning. And what C.S. Lewis is saying here is this. He's saying the mere fact that we're having a discussion about what is right and what is wrong is evidence that there is a God who gave us right and wrong. And that's a very significant fact.
And you know what's interesting, Kevin, is one of the arguments people always use against this, and C.S. Lewis, I would call that the moral argument for the existence of God. Immanuel Kant developed it a little bit too, the moral argument for the existence of God. One of the arguments always against it is, wow, look at slavery, look at Hitler, look at... And I always say, whoa, 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 we're not saying that people do a very good job of obeying this. In fact, the whole message of the Bible is that we're sinful and we don't obey our conscience. But, and I know this came up with Wesley, the very fact that we do such a poor job obeying our conscience tells us to treat people fair and equal. We don't treat people fair and equal. Our conscience tells us to not put ourselves first. We do put ourselves first. If we invented that conscience, why wouldn't we have invented a kind of morality that we could live up to better? The very fact that it's in such tension with our nature suggests strongly that it came from something outside of ourselves.
Absolutely. And if you look at it too, you know, animals don't talk about right and wrong. You know, the lion who hunts down the zebra doesn't feel guilty that he sleeps well that night. Yeah, ate a live creature.
Boy, that zebra, he had a mother. What have I done? He doesn't do that.
Exactly.
But we do as human beings.
Exactly. And evolution can't explain that. You see, biology and genetics has no ability to pass on a moral conscience. It just doesn't do this. And in fact, we should see the opposite of what we see in the world today when we look at somebody like Mother Teresa, or we look at somebody like the founders of Habitat for Humanity or the Salvation Army. We should be seeing the survival of the fittest. We should see the weak being dominated Okay, but instead, all over the world, we see millions and millions of people going out of their way. Why? Because of Jesus Christ, because of that conscience, okay, going out of their way to help people and do what's right. We don't see us acting like, well, when people abandon God or abandon their conscience, then they act like animals. But the fact of the matter is, the moral conscience can only be explained by God.
And the only good argument, and I think it's an argument that breaks down, even though it's good, but the only good argument I've ever heard that explains where the conscience came from, which was what our friend was trying to do, it's called the Wolfpack theory, that what we mistakenly call morality is this innate nature in human beings to have an instinct for survival. So the only reason I'm treating you a certain way is I want you to treat me a certain way. And what we're mistakenly calling morality is just a need for society to survive. The problem is there are many times when people make what they're saying there is we're motivated by convenience. What happens when we make a convenient decision at somebody else's expense? We do that whenever we refuse to give to a charity. If somebody was overcharged $10 by the grocer and knew that he'd never get caught, there'd be no consequence. He wouldn't go to jail. He'd still feel guilty for keeping that money. But according to the Wolfpack theory, that money, if anything, it helps them survive more. When people turned in their Jewish friends in the Holocaust because the Nazis said, turn in your friends or you'll die, the convenient survival instinct was to turn in their Jewish friends. Why did their consciences bother them when they did it? And it just shows that the Wolfpack theory doesn't really make a whole, it really breaks down after a while.
Absolutely. And just a couple, two last points too. Moral relativism is what is called a non-starter. Okay. It's a self-contradicting statement. And whenever somebody asserts that all morals are opinions, they're making a moral claim themselves. They're saying all morals are opinions. That's a moral claim. And it's a claim that's made as an absolute moral claim. Okay, so it falls in on itself. It's like saying I don't speak a word of English or draw me a round square or anything else. It just doesn't make sense. It's self-contradicting. And so the reality is that to live with the idea that morals are just opinions is not only dangerous, because if morals are only opinions, then we can go into all kinds of bad situations. For example, slavery or whatever. Right now, there's a guy at Princeton, Peter Singer, who thinks you should be able to abort babies up to 2 years old. Now, imagine if he became the moral majority and his idea of morality began to dominate America. What a horrible place we would be in. And yet, if you believe morals are opinions, you can't even talk against that. Who are you to impose your morality on Peter Singer? That's his morality, and it's just as valid as yours, because all morals are just opinions.
And yet look at the pro-life groups. When people would go out to abortion clinics and show pictures of a fetus and what it actually looks like, we hear that that's offensive, that's inappropriate, because they know that if it starts looking like a human being, well, we're supposed to treat human beings a certain way.
Yeah.
And so people come up with this idea that it's very similar to what they did with the slaves. Slaves are subhuman beings. We're doing the same with abortion. Fetuses are subhuman beings.
Exactly.
And now infanticide is trying to say, well, maybe they're subhuman beings even up to 2 years old, too.
Yeah.
But we come up with those things because the minute we admit that they're human beings, we're admitting that human beings should be treated a certain way.
That's right. And if you look at, it's a little bit frustrating to me when any atheists or agnostics say that biblical morality is bad. Biblical morality is what motivates people like World Vision. Okay, they're helping. In 2012, they helped 4.2 million children. They work in over 100 countries around the world. Habitat for Humanity, founded by Christians. They built 600,000 houses for needy people. The Salvation Army. In 2012 alone, Bob, the Salvation Army helped over 29 million people, all motivated by Christ. Samaritan's Purse is another one. You know that Samaritan's Purse during Christmas ships 100 million boxes of gifts to kids around the world, 100 million boxes to needy kids in 130 countries. That's all motivated by Christ. And you want to tell me biblical morality is wrong?
Well, now, Kevin, to be fair, we do have some countries that are motivated by secular humanism, such as Nazi Germany, godless national socialism, Stalin's Russia, godless national communism. Those were atheistic philosophies.
Yeah, and there is just no comparison. I mean, if I'm going to compare what my Christian friends dedicate their time and energy to what the atheists or agnostics I know dedicate their time and energy to. Now, Wesley's a great guy. You know, he's doing good
things. We're not saying that there aren't atheists that do good things, but we are saying countries that are driven with atheist philosophy right from the top are usually not so.
Yeah, exactly. And consider Mother Teresa. They have helped so many poor people since she started the Missionaries of Charity in 1950. Incredible what they've done. You could go on and on about the Christian organizations that have done this stuff. Teen Challenge, Prison Fellowship. Even right here in San Diego, our own church is organizing volunteers to go help the city right now.
Well, Kevin, right now somebody's thinking, wait a minute, Hitler was a Christian. No, he wasn't. He grew up in the Catholic Church. And it's true, you never heard him officially renounce it. But he was a fan of Friedrich Nietzsche, who Kevin talked about earlier, famous for the God is dead statement. He was a pantheist. That's a belief that nature's God. And he said Jesus was the illegitimate son of a Roman soldier, only he didn't use the word illegitimate. The word he used, I can't say on the air, use your imagination. Does that sound like the resume of a Christian? Kevin, always great to have you.
Thank you very much, Bob.
You are wise beyond your ears.
Yeah, thanks.
Years, I meant to say.
Beyond my ears.
I can't even see your ears. They're being covered up. Okay, folks, we will see you, and I hope Wesley takes me up on my offer. By the way, if you're out there thinking this was two against one, Wesley agreed to come on. He knew people would interview him. For what it's worth, I've been in rooms where 30, 40, 50 atheists at one time were throwing things at me. I know Kevin has too. However, I'm sincere. I will bring him back on. Next week, I challenged a Muslim to come on. He hasn't told me yay or nay yet. But in a couple of weeks, we will have our friend Wesley. It'll be evenly timed. Everybody can sleep well that night. It'll put a smile on your face and a pace in your step. We'll see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.